Welcome back to BCFM's Politics Show, Friday Drive Time, with old Labour Oxford economist Martin Summers and me, Tony Gosling. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu wants to attack Syria and Iran, so he visits Moscow. But while he's there, a new Russian fleet sails into the Mediterranean, so Netanyahu gets a cool response from the Russian President Vladimir Putin. And 3 weeks to go until the not-so-secret-as-they-used-to-be NATO Mafia Bilderberg Club conference. They have their annual conference in Britain this year. The protest festival outside is already being organised. Bilderberg don't appear on any of our university curriculums, at least not to my knowledge, but they control almost all of the money in the Western world. They were founded by a Nazi SS officer. So what's the latest on Bilderberg's links to fascism, war and organised crime? Meanwhile, doing something about Bristol First Bus's stranglehold virtually on our need to get to and from work every day. Many say it feels like a racket, but can suburban Bristol Railways and bus rapid transit do the trick? Judy Boston joins us, and she's been one of the prime movers in public transport in Bristol, trying to help get and succeeding getting more frequent services on the Severn Beach line. Martin Summers is going to begin, though, by taking us on a tour of the world's hotspots. Where would you like to start this week, Martin?
Well, where would you
I gave a clue. I gave you a clue with the meeting between Benjamin Netanyahu
the Eastern Mediterranean,
Vladimir Putin.
Then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Netanyahu has gone to talk to Putin to try and clear what he wants to do, i.e. intervene in Syria and possibly attack Iran. And Putin has responded by stonewalling and sending a fleet into the Mediterranean. I mean, and also supplying anti-ship missiles to the Syrians.
So this is a little bit cheeky, isn't it? Netanyahu wants to come to Moscow, I imagine, to sort of try and sort out the security situation. But while he's there, various things are going on, which are actually possibly making things worse. Putin is really almost taking the mickey.
Well, no, what's happening is that you've got Russian personnel working on these anti-aircraft and anti-ship missiles inside Syria. And I presume what Putin has told Netanyahu is, if you attack our personnel, we will attack you. I mean, that's how serious this is all becoming.
OK, we've also got a conference going on over the weekend at the Malcolm X Centre. Soft Drug Legalisation, it's called. The NORML conference. That's tomorrow and Sunday at the Malcolm X Centre. Entry price is £40 standard for the 2 days and £20 for concessions. Mr Nice, a.k.a. Howard Marks, will be opening the event. That's the Malcolm X Centre, which is in St Paul's. Also, one of the speakers, Martin, is this former MI5 officer, Annie Machon. Tell us a bit about her.
Well, she's a former MI5 officer. In this particular case, she's campaigning for legalisation of soft drugs. But, of course, we've also got Transform based in central Bristol. People can look them up on the internet.
And well, they'll be there tomorrow, yes.
Yeah, they're campaigning for the legalisation of all drugs. And, of course, this is actually, when you think about it, there was a UN report on drugs and crime that came out in 2009 from the UN Office on Drugs and Crime, which pointed out that all of the banking system had basically been rescued by the drug cartels. So when we're talking about, we're going to keep drugs illegal, well, that's the money from illegal drugs is what's keeping the banking system afloat. Now, at this point, it all gets rather silly, doesn't it? HSBC were caught out money laundering for the drug cartels a few months ago, and they've been let off with a slap on the wrist. Meanwhile, we're still arresting teenagers for smoking a joint. It's ridiculous.
Another person who's going to be there this time on Sunday at Malcolm X is Rowan Bosworth Davis, who was on this programme about a month ago. He's a former Fraud Squad officer who's going to be talking, I would imagine, about forensic money laundering experts. So he'll be talking about the money laundering aspect of this. Now, we know that some of the big high street banks have been money laundering, HSBC in Mexico, for example. Still, well, but the HSBC business has been very well proven by the American authorities. In fact, they are, pursuing prosecutions. But still, it seems, none of these top bankers go to jail. They still walk around scot-free.
Well, yes, and of course the Latin American politicians, senior politicians all over Latin America, are screaming from the rooftops, look, we have just got to legalise drugs.
But like isn't it like a bit like a banana republic, where there's a few kind of cosy elite that just do what they want, break the law day after day after day? I mean, what's happened to the judicial system and the policing where these people are just simply not prosecuted?
Well, it's what they call in Latin America impunidad, impunity. And human rights are often abused, not by people being, you know, sent to prison by a court. What happens is they get murdered by somebody, and the people who murder them don't get caught because they're working for the government or the drug cartels or both of them. And that's pretty common all over Latin America. I mean, in Colombia, for example, which I know quite a bit about, the Auto Unidas Defensas de Colombia, the AUC, is the right-wing paramilitaries funded by drug trafficking, with a wink and a nod from the CIA, as long as they keep on killing trade unionists and other opponents of the regime. And this is going on all over the world, and in Latin America people just regard this as an absolute joke. The drugs being illegal just creates the opportunity for intelligence services like the CIA to engage in all kinds of skullduggery with slush funds which are generated from the drugs trade.
And another person who's going to be at the conference at the Malcolm X over the weekend is the former Chief Constable of Cambridgeshire, Tom Lloyd.
Well, I presume he's in favour of legalisation, that's why he's there, yeah.
Annie Machon, though, let's talk about her a little bit more. It'd be interesting. We'll see if we can go down and have a chat with her tomorrow as well, because she was also involved in the UK 9/11 truth movement, and as such was removed from some panel, I believe, the United Nations discussion panel, due to Benai Barith lobbying. Now, what is Benai Barith?
Well, there
is an Israeli organisation.
Well, they're not an Israeli organisation. No? They're based in the US, but they're a sort of... they're very close to the Israeli government, let's put it that way. They're pro-Israel, strongly pro-Israel, and they lobbied for her to be removed from this UN panel because of her position, A, on 9/11, but also, which, you know, Annie's position is that the US government that carried out 9/11. One wonders why the Israelis feel that they have to pipe up. The other reason why, of course, they're opposed to her is because she blew the whistle on the fact that the Israelis probably bombed their own embassy here in Britain as a means of trying to gain sympathy for themselves, and, of course, Palestinians were fitted
just
up.
Just hang on a minute. Why would the Israelis bomb their own embassy?
Because they want to be seen to be the victims. And don't forget that Annie was part of MI5 when all of this happened, and she's got inside knowledge. And in fact, there's a couple of Palestinian activists who were sent to prison for that bombing, and Annie's position is that those guys are innocent and that the Israelis themselves, in fact, carried out the
bombing. And what does she base that on?
Based on the fact that she was an MI5 working on the case at the time.
Okay, moves that could destabilise the situation in Syria must be avoided. This is Putin again, but I mean, ultimately, Martin, this is his meeting with Benjamin Netanyahu. What is going to happen with Syria? Because we keep being told again and again there's going to be no acceptance of Assad continuing. David Cameron doesn't want him to continue as president. So what's going to happen? It seems like this is the real pinch point on the way to possibly an attack on Iran and war in the Middle East. Some really serious conflict. It's already going on in Syria, but I mean, what can happen, and what do you think is the situation there on the ground right now? I mean, for example, last week we had some of the Syrian rebels capturing some UN peacekeepers.
And there was also a bomb attack inside Turkey, just drove the border from Syria, blamed by the Turkish government on the Syrian intelligence services, blamed by the Syrians on the Turkish intelligence services. And of course, the Turkish intelligence services have got a track record of blowing things up and blaming it on different people, just as our own intelligence services have. They're part of NATO.
It seems a lot of this is about when there's a bomb attack of some kind or some atrocity, how do we know who's caused it? I mean, is it just I almost feel like, well, if the press attack telling us one thing, then it's probably the opposite.
Well, the fact is, we shouldn't jump to judgment when any of these terrible events happen. But of course, car bombs are 10 a penny in Iraq and Syria, and Turkey's just had one of its own. Of course, they've got a huge conflict with the Kurds, which has been going on for a long time. There's some kind of peace negotiation going on around that. The real danger is that Syria, you know, the tremendous suffering that's going on in Syria, whoever's to blame, is going to spread to Turkey, to Jordan, to Lebanon, to Iraq, and, of course, into Israel as well. And so the whole thing is on the edge of chaos.
Well, we had a US writer on this show the other day, Chris Bolin, talking about Terry Gilliam's film Brazil, where in that society, a sort of dystopia in the future, bombs are just going off willy-nilly here, there and everywhere. But actually, that is what it's like now in places like Iraq and Syria.
It is, yes, and of course we have, there's virtually as many people being killed in Iraq day by day as in Syria, but of course that's, we don't want to talk about that.
I wonder,
the same Sunni insurgents which are blowing up Shia mosques in Iraq are part of the same organisations which are blowing up Alawite mosques in Syria, and in the West is treating them in Iraq as terrorists and treating them in Syria as freedom fighters, but it's the same people.
I wonder if ordinary Iraqis are, praying for the days when Saddam was in charge to come back.
Well, I think it's very easy for us to sit in here and say what people in Syria or Iraq are thinking. I think people are suffering, of that we can be sure. And of course, what's happening all over the world is that as the economy crashes, and don't forget the places like Iraq and Syria were relatively prosperous, stable places before all this started, the situation is just getting worse and worse for ordinary people.
Drive Time on BCFM, 5 till 7 on 93.2 FM.
And a big scandal in... This is almost like something from James Bond, isn't it? Promises of millions, a new face and detailed instructions on a double agent conspiracy in Moscow, bearing the hallmarks of a Cold War spy thriller. Russia's counterintelligence agency has caught a CIA officer trying to flip a Russian operative. We are ready to offer you $100,000 to discuss your experience and cooperation. Also offering people $1 million a year payment if they come over to work for the American intelligence.
Well, yes, they're just...
And this is a note that they found on this guy.
Well, what we've actually got is the regime in Russia is digging its heels in. They've just sent a naval task force into the Eastern Mediterranean. They've supplied the Syrians with anti-aircraft and anti-ship missiles, the sort of missiles that kill aircraft carriers. And what Putin is saying, without shouting and screaming, is... Don't go any further, because you will cross a red line, and then you'll be fighting with us. And don't forget that our missiles kill aircraft carriers. The US has got about 30-odd aircraft carriers. They've got a lot more than anybody else. The Russians have got 2. The Chinese have got 1. But what the Chinese and the Russians have got, and they're going to give it to the Iranians and the Syrians, they've already passed them the stuff to them, is things that kill aircraft carriers. Now, just think, if we go to war with Syria, if Britain's 1 aircraft carrier is sunk in the Gulf, that will be everybody on that aircraft carrier will die, without doubt. So that'll be several tens of thousands of British sailors will die. That's where we're at.
Well, one of the reasons for that might be that the Americans do already think that they rule the world. This is this little map, Martin. This is in, I've just printed out a copy of it here, which is looking at the entire world divided up into US NORTHCOM, that's North America, US PACOM, which is in the Pacific, US SOUTHCOM, which is South America, US AFRICOM, which is Africa, US CENTCOM, which is the Middle East, US EUCOM, which is us, and Russia, and then USPACOM, which is Australasia and India and China. But, I mean, it's a little bit arrogant of them to be putting maps out like this, Martin, isn't it, where actually every part of the world comes under their command.
Well, indeed, it's what they call full-spectrum dominance, isn't it? I mean, the US has got hundreds of bases around the world, quite a few in this country. Now, you say, a country that just wants to mind its own business, why have you got bases everywhere? And that's because they want to rule everywhere. But, of course, other gangsters in China and Russia are not happy to allow the East Side to be taken over by Al Capone, so there's going to be some shooting, isn't there?
BCFM 93.2. Bristol is our community.
Well, good that you raised that, Martin, because the grandson of Malcolm X, Malcolm Shabazz, has died in suspicious circumstances. And this is from Amsterdam headlines. Malcolm Shabazz, a grandson of Malcolm X, is killed. Shabazz was Malcolm X's grandson. On February the 21st, 1965, Malcolm was killed as he was about to speak in Manhattan. In his autobiography, he commented on his possible death, saying, "Every morning when I wake now, I regard it as having another borrowed day. In any city, wherever I go, making speeches, holding meetings, or attending to other business, black men are watching every move I make, awaiting their chance to kill me. And I've said publicly many times, I know they have their orders. Anyone who chooses not to believe what I'm saying doesn't know the Muslims in the Nation of Islam. I know too that I could suddenly die at the hands of some white racist, or I could die at the hands of a Negro hired by the white man, or it could be some brainwashed Negro acting on his own idea that by eliminating me he would be helping out the white man, because I talk about the white man the way I do." But now his grandson is dead too, in suspicious circumstances,
in
Martin.
Mexico.
Died in Mexico Franco. Also, he'd been being harassed and hassled by the FBI for quite a long time. But, I mean, many people, or some people anyway, are saying that it's that it could have been just an accident, that this guy just didn't like him, attacked him and killed him.
Well, there is a track record of the US intelligence services, the FBI and others, of assassinating political opponents. I mean, Martin Luther King's family have had a day in court in the US recently, in the last couple of years, where they've brought a civil action against the US government, and they had a jury in the courtroom, and the jury concluded that the state indeed was responsible for the assassination of Martin Luther King. Now, in actual fact, what we're dealing with in the United States is an illegitimate gangster government that murders its political opponents, which is why Putin looks them in the eye and says, "And you're going to accuse us of not having any human rights in Russia? Don't make me laugh."
Drive Time on BCFM, 5 till 7 on 93.2 FM.
Finally, in our international section, Greece is trying to kill its biggest anti-government website and radio stations. The Athens branch of Indie Media, an independent open network of journalists who report on political and social issues, was shut down last Thursday. Before its plug was pulled, the site was used for such principal purposes as reporting on cases of police brutality and expressing underground dealings between the Greek police force and the neo-Nazi Golden Dawn Party. If you've somehow managed not to come across it before, it's a kind of localised WikiLeaks, only without that tricky stigma that comes with rape allegations and overstaying your welcome at South American embassies. You might also remember the case of 15-year-old Alexander Grigoropoulos, whose death in 2008 at the hands of a Greek police officer spurred the riots that plunged Athens into apocalyptic tumult for almost a month. Indie Media helped to uncover the details of that shooting and played a large part in helping demonstrators mobilise and communicate in the riots that followed. Golden Dawn and the police. Indie Media is exposing it, Martin, and now they're being closed down.
Yeah, well, don't forget there was a military coup in Greece in the 1960s, backed by the British and the Americans, in which thousands of people were tortured to death by the Greek army with the support of NATO. And, of course, people in Greece remember that. They also remember, of course, in the Second World War, they were occupied by Angela Merkel's country, Germany. And, you know, basically, democracy, even in the country which supported the idea of democracy, is an incredibly fragile thing.
And what about, many people here looking at Spain, looking at Greece, looking at Italy, and wondering how long until that kind of chaos comes here? I mean, the lack of jobs, the real, you know, basically just completely running out of money. How long until that's coming here?
Well, I think we're coming to an inflection point in the crisis. What people don't seem to realise is that the euro crisis isn't about the euro, it's about the banking system.
And yeah, but the bankers are winning. They're slowly but surely winning. Well, all the time they're winning, they are not going to allow themselves to collapse, are they?
Well, no, because they can't help. But the point is that they control the collapse and the follow-on. But they know there's going to be a collapse,
and they're
ready for it.
You look in the debt in America, right? You've got trillions and trillions of debt. It's going up all the time. In fact, there's a little debt clock online.
Yeah, that's just the money the government owes.
They can continue. The banks can continue to produce money, continue to extend loans. It's a bit like the loan shark can keep coming back.
Well, in Japan, they've just decided to have a massive stimulus package with the new right-wing government in Japan. But of course, it's not working because it's actually forcing up the interest rate on their bonds. Now, there's so many different ways in which a crash could happen here that I think I'm absolutely on solid ground by saying that there will be a crash at some point. If a country the size of Cyprus hadn't been fixed properly, that could have been the triggering point. And there's basically lots of Cypresses out there, and at some point there is going to be a crash, which is what makes all this argument in or out of the EU so irrelevant. The banking system is about to go down the tubes, just like in Argentina in the 2000s, and then people will not be worried about whether they're in or out of the EU. They'll be wondering whether they can get any money out of the bank at all and what they're going to eat tomorrow.
And one of the main things that's been going on in the Middle East this week, and we're talking also about Pakistan as well, is mosque bombings. This is really worrying, isn't it? Yeah. Because it seems that who is planting these? Again, we come back to this question: who is planting these bombs? Because it is quite feasible for someone to be orchestrating this Shia versus Sunni thing, making it look as if these communities are fighting each other. Oh. And I mean, we had in the Second World War, we had synagogues being attacked, synagogues being bombed. Now it's mosques.
Yes, and of course what's really, the whole Sunni versus Shia thing is being pushed by the neocons in the West and by the Israeli right wing, because having the Shias kill the Sunnis and the Sunnis kill the Shias saves us the bother. But of course the whole game is to control oil, resources, territory.
Is it fair to relate some of this to the Protestants versus the Catholics in Northern Ireland? Because there was
every conflict has got a specific history, and there are specific reasons why people don't like each other or feel difficult to get on. I mean, I used to be an aid worker in Bosnia. It seemed to be complicated enough before I got there, and when I got there, I realised it's even more complicated than that. I mean, what you've got is people using chaos as a means of extending their power and their influence. So the Israeli state, for example, has got a vested interest in seeing Iraq and Syria in turmoil. They are rubbing their hands going, good, that's what we want to see. And they're actually helping to make sure that that happens.
So how does this operate, and who's behind it?
Well, we don't know. An individual attack could be anything. Could be anybody.
But it's a pattern, well, isn't it?
Yeah, but
yesterday, 48 people killed in an Iraq bombing in Baqbar yesterday, for example.
Yes, well, I mean, basically...
It's day after day now.
I'll just give a copper's hunch here. What people have got to realise is the Al-Qaeda groups which are out there doing most of these kind of attacks on civilians are, in fact, being indirectly orchestrated by Western intelligence services. This is what the Russians are saying. And they, of course, have their means of finding this stuff out. Now, basically, we are dealing with intelligence services in the West and in Russia and in Israel, which are way out of control, way beyond the law, and they should, in fact, be prosecuted by the civilian police force, basically. That's who should be dealing with it. But if the civilian police force don't step forward and deal with these people as they should be dealt with, then, of course, we're all going to war.
Well, one of the examples of that, of course, was the MI6 being in Finsbury Park Mosque, whatever it was, about 7 or 8 years ago, before the 2005 bombings. And they were, the ordinary Muslims in the mosque were reporting, as we always encourage people to do, to the police, these rather strange Muslims that turned up and seemed to want to start wars and things. I think it's Abu Hamza was one of them, I believe, and also Haroon Aswat was one of them. And yet, when the police then pass this up to the security services to do something about it, nothing happened.
Well, the police have got to stop listening to the security services and start treating them as suspects. Like the police service of Northern Ireland has been set up, it's not the IUC, it's not MI5. And if things go wrong, they should be on that case.
BCFM 93.2. Bristol is our community.